Welcome on the podcast.
Jake, how are you?
I'm very well, mate. Thank you. So I was doing a bit of research before our call. We've obviously met in person before, which is fun. It's not always the case in, you know, those of us working in and around Bitcoin, often kind of sidelined to the edges of the internet, and like chatting away. So it's cool to have met in person first and then do a pod.
100%.
I would just love to learn more about what your business is and how you're building it.
Yep.
And I've got a ton of questions as to, like, probably anyone would ask on the way through your onboarding process. But to start off from the very top then, Minotaur is a trading system built on top of Bitcoin. Why is that helpful?
So for a few reasons. Trading, the markets are there to be traded, right? That's what they are. Bitcoin is a highly liquid asset that can be traded 24/7, which already makes it more unique than most markets. It also is, you know, in its infancy. It has high volatility, which is great because volatility creates opportunity. And then on the other side of that is, you know, as a Bitcoiner or as a getting to a, I would say I'm almost a maxi now, probably am fully a maxi. You do realize that this is potentially a civilization changing invention, or at least one of the biggest technological advancements or breakthroughs probably since the Industrial Revolution. But that aside, what my company does, and I think it solves a really big problem, and that's for people to actually generate cash flow either from their Bitcoin or create cash flow from trading Bitcoin, right? And I think that that's something that most people aren't able to do, right? They either buy and hold, and at some point they have to sell. Or if they don't ever need to sell, they hold it. But if you're just holding it forever, you're never able to do anything with it. You are building wealth, but it is just paper wealth. So why not put that to work? And that's what my company does. We focus on doing that.
Awesome. And I think it's fun to start here in a sense as well, which is the kind of wider picture. I went through the video that you shared with me that's part of your kind of customer onboarding and how to listen to what you were running through there. And you talked about the investor's dilemma. So what is the investor's dilemma?
The investor's dilemma is basically, where are you going to put your money, right? What are you going to do?
Hello.
Whether you're working in a job and you've got savings, or you own a company and you're saving money, or you've, you know, inherited money, or whatever your background is, you need to make a choice about where you're going to put your money and what you're going to do with it. And there's also things like, what do you need from that savings, or what do you need from that investment? Like, it's great to squirrel away things for the future, but what happens if you need to pay the rent today? What happens if you need to pay the grocery bills? What happens if you just need extra money because inflation's high and you can't afford you know, the cost of living? You need an extra 10, 20, 30% a week. Well, you need to look at all the opportunities that are available to you. And there are lots of opportunities available to institutional level investors or sophisticated investors. Usually a sophisticated investor in Australia has to have a net worth of $1 million or more, or a $250,000 annual income, which basically prices most people out of that. So most of the double-digit returns that you're able to get anywhere in the world aren't available to the average person. Enter Bitcoin, right? We all know that the CAGR of Bitcoin is around 40 to 45%, right? That's the compounded annual growth over the last around 11 years. Absolutely fantastic. But you still need to sell it, right, at some point if you want to realize those gains. And then we have the other problem of the cycles, right? Bitcoin has extremely volatile cycles, big booms and big busts. Problem is, most retail investors are going to buy at the top and sell at the bottom, right? Huge problem. Most people are losing money. Again, it's always working in the favor of the institutions or the people who are highly sophisticated. This is where we step in, where we've built a system that enables us to extract that value on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. So we're kind of price agnostic. We're also kind of cycle agnostic. No matter what the market's doing, we're able to generate returns. And, you know, we do that in two ways. Like I said, we're able to either use the Bitcoin that we have as collateral to trade with, which is almost like earning a yield on that Bitcoin, which is pretty amazing, because then you can use the profits that you're generating and you can use them in the real world. It's like getting rent on your Bitcoin. Or simply go, you know, I just want to use Bitcoin and its volatility to generate income like a business would, right? And then you've got a side hustle going or a separate business going. So these are two kind of things that we've seen a huge problems that need fixing, right? And that's like, it's great that Bitcoin's out there and it's great that it's going in a certain way. People need to be able to, at some point, do something with that money. With that paper wealth, without having to sell down that asset, right? You don't mortgage your house in order to pay the bills. So we need to be able to generate rent, right? That's basically what we're talking about here.
Yeah, it's really cool. And obvious examples being if you own an equity and that equity pays a dividend, then you have a yield on your equity. Equally, you know, you own a piece of real estate and you rent it to someone, the rent equals some yield on the asset that you own underneath that. Right. When you own Bitcoin in self-custody, it's digital gold and it doesn't have a yield. People will always complain, like, why do people buy gold? You know, it doesn't yield anything. Why would you even do that? And I'm personally very comfortable with owning as much Bitcoin as possible in self-custody, and the multiples that it can potentially return completely outweigh any other area that you might want to deploy capital, in my opinion, especially from a risk reward perspective. And so I feel like what this might be is an additional tool in the toolbox for a percentage of your portfolio to generate some yield.
Yeah.
So I'd love to understand how you think about the, like, let's say you were complete Bitcoin maxi, balls to the wall, 100% all in. Like, what percentage of that 100% might you put towards a trading system?
It's a great question. And we get a lot of these questions from people. And then they're like, you know, I just want to buy and hold it. And it's like, it's just a tool, right? What we have is a tool. It doesn't replace what you're doing. The fact that we're trading Bitcoin doesn't mean that you should sell your blue chip stocks, right? You don't need to do that. That's fine. You can keep them and also trade Bitcoin, right? Doesn't mean you need to sell your company and use all the money to trade Bitcoin. No. It's just a tool. And that's a really important thing to understand, right? It's just a tool. And that's what you use. So one of the things that we do when we work with our clients, and look, I'm also talking to, trying to really make the distinction between a trading system and a trading bot. We use trading bots to execute what we're doing, because what we've actually got is an automated trading strategy. But this trading system and the strategy itself is more like what you're talking about. It's about portfolio allocation, position sizing. When do we deploy the capital? Where are we in the cycle? And we do help with those things as well. So to answer your question, I always ask another question. It's like, well, you tell me, how much money do you need extra in the year, right? We can reverse engineer it. We know, and it's quite predictable, what percent returns that various strategies that we have will return, right? Well, then we simply go, okay, well, this is how much capital is required to generate what you need. But that's how much we suggest you should deploy. Keep the rest in cold storage, right? Just deploy what you need based on what your goals are. Don't listen to other people. Don't worry about what they're doing. Just worry about what you need. And that's basically what we do, just reverse engineer it.
Great. And that's a good reframe, because at the end of the day, all these decisions that you make, only you are accountable to them. And in some ways, that's the beauty of capitalism. If your money's gone, mate, it's gone. Yeah. Now, ironically, we live in a system in which actually there's a lot of actors out there that know that they can get it very wrong and they will get bailed out. And that's the wild nature of how the financial system's actually built. I don't want to go on a big rant about like the macro case for Bitcoin necessarily. I'm more really interested in what you've actually built, because it's fair to say that since we spoke about it in person, I haven't looked closely at it until the research I did for this call. And I'm really impressed. In particular, when I saw some YouTube footage of you pulling apart your trading view and how you've got these kind of preset allocation sizes that are very small, but you've got like 97 of them. And then the strikes that were being made, you were confident of being right, like 96% of the time or something.
Yeah.
So if you could just teach me a bit more about let's say I was signing up as a customer, what do I actually get?
Yeah.
And the wider picture being, I'm extremely dubious of people selling yield, in particular when it's like, ooh, if you just give me your Bitcoin, you can trust me and I'll give you back 3% or 10% or 5% or whatever. And the likes of BlockFi and Celsius and all this kind of stuff that went very, very wrong in the not too distant past. How does Minotaur kind of differentiate to that?
Yeah, so firstly, the biggest thing is that you never give us your money. That's just the absolute biggest.
I love that. Yeah.
Okay, you never send us a cent, right? The whole way that we set it up is we share our algorithm with you. So we've written a very complex algorithm, and that we're able to share that with our clients through TradingView, which is TradingView's one of the charting websites in the world. So we're able to just share that with you. And then what we're also able to do is using our software is connect that algorithm, which is essentially the signals, the buy and sell signals that we're generating. We're able to connect that to your exchange of choice. So we actually connect to pretty much all the major centralized exchanges in the world, whether it's Bybit or Binance or Coinbase in the States, Kraken, you name it, we can do it. And we're also working on a decentralized solution using Hyperliquid on Arbitrum. So that's going to be an exciting thing that we're going to be deploying later in the year. So yeah, the first thing is that I agree with you. If anyone asks you to send your money to generate yield, never do it, right? We've seen that happen last cycle. It completely destroyed people. Now, all that we're doing when we're saying using your Bitcoin as collateral is we're just taking advantage of a specific functionality of the exchanges themselves. So to use two examples, Bybit has what's called a unified trading account. Binance has a multi-commodities account. What that means is that you're able to trade futures, perpetual contracts, and derivatives, and you're able to do it instead of depositing USDT like a normal bank account. You go to your broker, here's $1,000, I want to start trading. These platforms are later deposit Bitcoin or Ethereum or Ripple or whatever it is, XRP, and you can use the value of that token in order to then trade with, right? So we're just taking advantage of a functionality that's built into the centralized exchanges, or we're showing you how to do it. And then effectively what you're doing is you're borrowing against that asset in order to place the trades. Now, that particular setup using the collateral to trade with is a little bit more advanced. The average person we always suggest is just use the dollar amount, right? Bring in USDT and trade Bitcoin with it for USDT. That's the simple way to do it. But obviously, if you do it with Bitcoin as collateral, you get a double upside. You get the upside of Bitcoin, if your timing is right, which this cycle was around 6.6x from 16K to where we are now, 110, wherever it's going to go. Again, I think there will be diminishing returns, and we can come to that at the end of the call, my long-term outlook. But what we're able to do is just use that Bitcoin as collateral and trade with it. Now, are you earning a yield? No. You're actually trading with it and you're earning USDT. Would you call it a yield? Maybe, right? But it's always...
Yeah, they're short-term trading profits, essentially.
Correct. So it's not a yield, but it technically you are earning a percentage because you're using that collateral and you're getting a return against it. Mm. So call it what you will. We never touch the accounts. You always have complete access. You can stop the bots at any time. You can draw all your cash at any time. So this is one of the biggest, I guess, the differentiality. We're not some kind of Web3 application where you're staking your funds in. We're doing this simply through the centralized exchanges, and we're just taking advantage of the functionality available to anyone.
Awesome. Well, shout out to my friend Jigs. Years ago, he was working on a trading system of his own, and he contacted someone in Eastern Europe who wrote some code for him that he plugged in the back of TradingView. And I've had automated signals to buy and sell. And, you know, we've been very much playing around with that. And for us, I say for us, Jigs has developed the system himself. He's become almost like a hybrid long-term investor, where he's really working over like multiple year hold frames. And so the need for an AI bot in that scenario, just it doesn't, you know, because it's not high frequency at all. It's literally like, yeah, okay, I'm going to ride this for however many months, years, and the position is then sold out, and then it works differently. what you're explaining here is the same thing. It's like you're the person logging into TradingView. Here is our IP with our, you know, algorithm that goes in the back of TradingView that you purchase. Is it a one-time purchase or do you pay like a recurring monthly?
Yeah, so we have a licensing fee for the algorithm, and then we're going to have our, we've got our software where there's a small recurring subscription for the software.
So there's no like carry. So it's not like, yeah, we'll make some of your profits. So you're not taking people's money in that sense. You're not a discretionary manager of their funds.
No.
Like I had an old podcast and I interviewed a guy who was a community manager for Celsius who said, all you've got to do is trust us with your digital assets, quote unquote, on the pod. And it's like, cool. That went really spectacularly badly. And so here I'm reminded of that phrase of like, feed a man a fish, he eats for a day, teach a man to fish, and you feed him for life. And in this case, instead of teaching him to fish completely, you're like...
electric fishing rod.
Yeah. That's what we're doing. Yeah, here's the super trawler.
It's got the super trawler.
Yeah, nice.
He's got the super trawler. He's got the super trawler controlled by a drone that's running on a cone.
Yeah. But what I liked about your presentation was you made the great point. It's like, people are already taking advantage of the shift in technology around us. As investors, I strongly believe in this idea of like seeking your edge. What can you do better than anyone else? And if you can find tools that help you gain an edge, use them. Some ways, it doesn't really matter how it works. Does that resonate in terms of the type of customers that are coming to you? Like, who really affiliates with this?
So, one of the things that we really focus on is firstly that our system doesn't try to predict the price, which is a really important thing. We found that anything that tries to predict the price can look really good in backtesting. It tends to fail in real life environments. So we developed a system that it doesn't really matter what the price does, we're able to generate a return from it. And what we really focus on the most is capital preservation, is not losing, right? Mm. The fact is, in the crypto sphere, especially with Bitcoin, if you can protect the downside, the upside will take care of itself, right? The trick is to not lose. So we did the opposite of what most people do when they're working on algorithms. Instead of trying to figure out how much money they can make as fast as possible, what we said to ourselves, how do we stop ourselves from losing money? And let's just see how much money we can make, right? The returns that we're able to see on our conservative bot is around 2 to 3 to 5% a month, right? Now, if you've got $1,000, it's not going to change your life. It's absolutely not. It's too slow. Those kind of people are going to end up jumping into meme coins and losing their money. But unfortunately, you know, you can put an algorithm on steroids and it might work for a little bit, but the wheels will come off. That's the problem. What we've developed is something that is like an all-weather kind of system. And it's going to work particularly well for people that have five figures or more. So we're looking for people, we don't need high net worth sophisticated individuals, but what we do need is people that have realistic expectations and are patient, right? Because like you said, if you're playing the long game, the tortoise and the hare, if you're the tortoise, the compounding gains over time really make the difference.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah. And like I said, so this the important things is that the algorithm that we have is extremely good at entries, and it does this by using a confluence of indicators. So we've layered in around 10 to 15 different types of indicators, and we're extremely good at entering the market at a really good opportunity. The next most important thing is position sizing, right? You need to engineer a position size that reflects the capital that you have to deploy and that will also survive massive black swan events, right? You can't be trading in a range where if the unexpected happens, like the tariffs, which just happened, you know, we're down almost two black swan events, right? We were at 108K. And then what was the news before the tariffs? I can't remember. There was something to do with what's going on in politics. And then we had the tariffs and we're down to like 78K. Our system's not even stressed at this point because these kind of scenarios are already built into our thinking, right? So we're able to really ride these out without any kind of stress. So again, what we're focusing on is just protecting that capital protecting that downside, the upside will just simply take care of itself.
Cool. And again, this idea of like, okay, if I'm going to part ways with my Bitcoin, where's it going to go? Okay, well, I'm going to take more risk. Fact. Like, there's no way
it's
risky than Bitcoin. So, okay, in order to get more Bitcoin, I have to take some risk with it. And this is one potential avenue to do that, which, you know, yes, it involves some kind of exchange because, like, you know, the shitcoin casinos are not my favorite by any means. But at the same time, if that's where you can go and get the liquidity you need and it's all automated, then you can basically just kick back and watch the whole thing function. All you've got to supply is the liquidity in the first place, i.e. the capital. And I'm absolutely sure of the fact that just Bitcoin specifically, right? Is Bitcoin going to be around in 10 years' time to trade? 150% yes.
Absolutely.
And so if you are able to develop strategies now, that's surely a good bet. And I've looked at so many markets over the years, right, where it's like, well, what if this company's not around in 5 years' time? Or whatever the case might be. And so I think that's a really fun way to be like, great place to be building a business. What I'd love to do actually, Costa, is kind of wind back a bit. Like, how did you even get into trading? Like, why is investing interesting to you? And you told me a great story in person as to basically how you got to this point, but it'd be fun to explain to others.
Yeah, so I've when I finished school, I went to university for under a year because I failed, I think, 70% of the subjects because I did something I wasn't interested in. And I traveled for a few years and I really started reading a lot and I came across the 4-Hour Workweek, right? I think everyone's heard of that book.
Mm.
And I built my first, I built a couple, or started building a couple of internet businesses. One of them, I needed, it was a publishing company. I had an idea for a couple of failed. And then the next one that I had was an idea for a publishing company. And my friend, my best friend, who was a stockbroker at the time, put up the capital that I needed in order to get going. And we did extremely well for that business. And we ran it for around 7 years. And because we were doing so well, I had a lot of capital that I had to deploy. And he was a stockbroker and he was incredibly good at picking stocks. So we did incredibly well buying stocks, mostly on the ASX, right? The Australian stock market. And then what happened is I sold the business because it kind of hit a plateau. Market was quite saturized. We didn't really have an edge any longer. And it was just time to say goodbye. And so we sold the company and then COVID hit. So COVID hit. And in the meantime, my stockbroker business partner had started a fund probably about a year and a half before. It's a value fund based out of Melbourne. They manage around 400, 450 million. So it's quite a substantial size fund. And they needed some, or I actually offered to do some digital marketing for them in order to help them raise capital during COVID because they actually couldn't go and have any more meetings, right? So they were very old school meeting people in person. And I was like, let's just try this digital thing. And he trusted me because we'd done well with our business. And I knew his investing style because I'd been trading with him for like 7 years. So I could talk about the companies because I owned them. And I could talk about the strategy because I understood it. And that went really well for a few years. But then at the same time, because of what I've been doing with my digital marketing, I met another person who asked me to help develop a product or help with the strategy of a product that was in cryptocurrencies. So I decided to help out with that. And I was kind of in the background, so that was more helping put everything together. And that went incredibly well until the market crashed really badly with FTX and Celsius. And it was at that point that I realized that there was tremendous potential in this industry. And it was really, you know, when they do that circle where you've got like your strengths and then you've got the intersecting point. Mm-hmm. Well, there was traditional investing and there was digital marketing. And the crossover that is Bitcoin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because Bitcoin is the digital version of, you know, a traditional financial instrument, essentially. It's just a digital version of it. It's 24/7. It's highly liquid. And the idea that I could put the skills that I developed through the digital marketing and apply them to a financial asset, Bitcoin became that. And then here we are, really.
So cool.
Yeah. A lot of the lessons we learned, though, from the last cycle and the crash is that it doesn't matter how much money you make when it's going up. It's how much you keep when it's going down, right? And the system that we created now is the kind of system that can survive that kind of crash and still generate returns, right? That's what's most important. And really, our system only focuses on that. We're always looking at the worst case scenario. What's going to happen if the worst thing happens at this moment, and will we survive it? And it's a very, I think it's a very contrarian way to look at it. But in reality, it seems like the reasonable and logical position to take, right? But it is quite contrarian in this world of everyone chasing the fast gains or everyone chasing the new thing. I'll give you a piece of data that we brought up in our testing. If you use Bitcoin as collateral and apply our trading system to that collateral, the gains that we're getting are the equivalent to Bitcoin in 2017 right now, in 2025.
Unpack what that means.
So basically, if you look at the returns of the growth of Bitcoin in 2017, that's what we're able to generate now, our returns. It's the equivalent of what Bitcoin was doing in 2017, right?
Yeah, nice.
So what we're able to do is really put the returns, the buy and hold returns that you'd be getting right now, we can amplify that through what we're doing, right? Because really what we're doing is we're creating a flywheel where we use the Bitcoin as collateral if we choose to take on that strategy. We earn USDT and then we're buying more Bitcoin, right? And then we're putting that Bitcoin back into the collateral and we're increasing the position size. So what we've created is even if you've only got X amount of Bitcoin, we can increase the amount of Bitcoin you have without you having to buy any more Bitcoin. That's what's really special about what we can do. You do that for 3-4 years, you might be able to double, triple the amount of Bitcoin that you're holding.
Awesome. And therefore, investing in the system that you've built makes a lot of sense. Like, why would you buy this thing? It's like, okay, well, we can help you figure out a way to create additional returns. And the cost of purchasing that insight is like a fraction of what you might make.
Right.
And that's the sell. Okay, cool. And I always love understanding how people pulled the dots together to get to Bitcoin. Yeah. Because it's still rare, right? There's not many people building a business or running a podcast on top of Bitcoin.
No.
And that's what's going to be great fun in the years to come. We'll look back and like, God, that's a wild time to be getting involved. This system that you're describing to me is basically you're taking skills that were acquired in the traditional finance sector and reapplying it to this new thing. And that just hasn't been done all that well and certainly not productized for retail investors to get involved. And yeah. I love that kind of thing. So can you help to explain to me then, like, how did you actually build this? What even is an algorithm? And I don't want to obviously.
No, you don't want
to. Don't share any IP that you're not willing to share. But like, what is this? Like some shadowy supercoders in the background somewhere? Like, yeah, how do you actually do this?
Actually, is some shadowy supercoders in the background.
Cool.
You know, we.
Because is that you doing that, or you as the entrepreneur have thought, okay, how did you kind of pull it all together?
That's really what the last couple of years has been about. And it's a really good question. And I guess it's one of those things that, like, when you look back on it, you're like, oh my God, like, there was so much chance and luck.
Yeah.
Like wild, wild west stuff. But we've worked with a lot. This is another thing, right? I'm a true believer that there are a lot of super, super talented people that are very, very good at executing a particular skill. I think there's less people that are able to take that knowledge and either, like you said, productize it or even apply it in a way that kind of makes sense. There are a lot of good coders. They just don't know what to do with the code, right? So to cut a long story short is that we had an idea of a strategy and then we worked with a lot of different people to help us. Well, initially it was about the entry, right? It was all about the entry. How do we come up with this when we're running, for example, we can run an algorithm on 1 minute, 5 minute, 15 minute, but we're testing mostly on the 15 minute, right? The 15 minute candle, it just gave us enough breathing room to make really smart entries. We had an idea of where we wanted to be, and then we'd have to work with lots of different developers until we found the one who was delivering the results that we wanted, right? And then when we got to that place, we were happy with the dev, we were happy, and we've got our own CTO who's quite skilled with coding as well. When we were really happy with that, then we would start running it, and we go, okay, it's missing this piece. Can you build that? It's missing this piece. Can you build that? So what's interesting is like a lot of these coders, like a lot of people from the outside might think like, oh, if you can code, you can come up with the blueprint. No, no, no. Those guys can code. They're coming up with the little snapshots of every piece. You need to have an idea as a CEO or as an engineer or whatever. It's like, this is what I want, and I need you to help me execute that strategy. So once that happened, we kept finding holes in the system, and we kept working on version one, version two, different iterations, different testing. And at the same time, we're running the algorithm through backtesting, but we're also running Monte Carlo simulations of the Bitcoin price, which effectively means that you don't use just the price history, the real price history. You create a fake price history, and you create a Monte Carlo simulation, creates simulations of multiple fake price histories. So it's like parallel universes where Bitcoin existed, but traded in different prices. And then we run our algorithms that we come up with, and we test it against these simulations as well, until we came up with the retail product that we have now, which survived everything. It survived not only Bitcoin's price history, it also survived the fake versions of Bitcoin's price history that the Monte Carlo simulation created. That's why we're so confident about our approach. It's not just backtested on trading, it's extremely well stress tested through multiple environments.
And then that's also then the key, though, is when if you're not betting everything and it does go to zero, well, that was still a calculated bet, right? You're like, oh, I'm still trying to make a margin here where you're using better information and better tools, and hence you can actually, you know, take value from somewhere, essentially. Well, first of all, the more you get into Bitcoin, the more it's like, for me personally speaking, that's all I really want to work on. And I become less interested in spending time that like props up the old system. And to some degree, like, you just have to just get over that fact. You need to use tools in other areas, whether that be USDT or some kind of, you know, shitcoin exchange. Like, just, that's okay. It is what it is. It's a means to an end. But this trading system, can you use it on other assets to Bitcoin, or have you built it very specifically to Bitcoin?
Yeah, so we can actually use it on any asset. It actually can trade any digital currency. Wow. So the reality is you don't really want to, right? Bitcoin has specific characteristics that all the other digital currencies don't, right? We're working with... Firstly, we're working very closely with Giovanni Santastassi, who basically discovered the power law theory behind Bitcoin's growth, which basically means that Bitcoin is growing via a power law trend. Now, a power law is a very, very unique characteristic that is not typical of a financial asset. It's more typical of, for example, the growth rate of a city. The growth rate of a city like New York or Tokyo follows a power law. Now, why would this happen to a financial asset? Well, Bitcoin's not only a commodity, it's also a social network, right? Mm-hmm. When you start to understand that, you start to understand why or how Bitcoin can also be growing, not only as a financial asset like gold, but also as a social network like Facebook, right? Now, that gives one confidence. If you have Ethereum or XRP, it doesn't have that, right? Mm. What we start to understand when we were deploying, because we could put our algorithm on Ethereum and it would do like 4 or 5x what Bitcoin would do, but not safely, right? It wouldn't survive all the stress testing that we would do. The thing about Bitcoin is the ironic thing that it almost has a predictable growth. If you take away the boom and bust cycles, it is actually growing at a very, very steady rate. It's a scale invariant rate. in other words, that at every scale of it, it's increasing, but it's also diminishing returns, which we believe is one of its strengths. So this is also like a contrarian idea. People think that the adoption is going to take off and it's going to explode, whereas our position is that the explosive growth has already happened. What's going to happen now is we're going to have diminishing bubbles, diminishing returns, but a steady rate of growth, potentially forever. As long as it exists in a fiat system, Bitcoin's value will increase over time, right? But it should increase at this power law rate for at least the next 10, perhaps 20 years. After that, who knows, right? Now, as traders, it gives us a few things. It gives us what's called like a mean, where the price is kind of oscillating around, which does give us a lot of information. Another really important thing, it gives us this power law support. Now, we don't have a chart in front of us, but the power law support, we believe, has something to do with the physics of the mining. So in other words, that if the price drops to a certain point, Bitcoin becomes unprofitable to mine, and it would actually be cheaper for the miners to buy Bitcoin instead of actually mining it. So it actually makes no sense to mine anymore, which would mean that there's incredible buying pressure at that point, which kind of makes the price stay above this level. As a trader, if you're not having to deal with a range between zero to infinity, the power law support right now tells us it's around 35 to 38K. That really narrows our trading range, which enables us to generate really, really good returns because we're able to focus on a range. That's actually quite specific. But if I told you right now, I asked you right now, what do you think the chances of Bitcoin going to 35K today are? What would you say?
35, 1%.
Okay, correct. So everyone knows that there's a certain price with Bitcoin that it's probably not going to go back to again. If you look at that, that's where the power law support lies. Mm. So what we've done, and that was kind of the missing piece, it's actually, you would be surprised how easy it is to create a trading system that can make you money in the short term. It's not that hard. You could probably use ChatGPT. What's actually really hard is creating something that will work all the time, no matter what happens. And that's what we've been able to create here. But the missing piece was the actual DNA of Bitcoin itself. Without the DNA of Bitcoin itself, we're a little bit like we're flying without. Bitcoin gives us a clear roadmap. So to answer your question, if we put our algorithm on our other asset, it's like we can only see 10 meters in front of us.
Yeah.
Bitcoin, we can see forever.
Because I'm thinking of like, I don't even know what the most highly traded asset is. Take an example of like, let's say you're trading an Apple stock. There could be, it's a small chance, but there could be some outrageous internal error and they've been cooking the books for like decades and a huge corruption thing right. comes up. And actually the price tanks so hard that the ability to repay debt disappears. And actually, you know, the company's bankrupt and it's gone.
It's never going to go back up.
Like it's completely gone in a matter of days. Now, that's an equity position that you might be trading specifically. I then thought about more of a commodity style, like an oil. Okay, let's take West Texas Intermediate crude oil. Like, could it completely go negative? Well, yes. Like, people have to sometimes pay to get rid of the oil that they've bought. That's the physical traders doing that, of course. The derivatives market is different. But the point being is it's a big moment when you suddenly think this thing is so different.
Yeah. Like,
could it actually go to zero? And now a lot of people out there will be like, it's vaporware. Why are you even touching it? But that's the contrarian insight, right? Is it's actually extraordinarily valuable. And the price floor, as you've just pointed out, is much more predictable than what people realize.
That's right. That's cool. Right. And
really,
you know,
cool.
That's perfectly said. But, you know, is it... Am I 100% sure? I'm probably 99%
sure. No, but you don't need to be as a trader because you're taking hedged bets.
Correct. But what we have to understand is that if there was no risk, there would be no money to be made. Zero. There would be zero, right? There has to be risk. If there's no risk, there's no opportunity, right? The opportunity is what creates the wealth. So you have to take on some element of risk. You have to make a choice. Now, I wanted to like go back to what you said. This was one thing that I got stuck on for so long because I was kind of anti-Bitcoin for a while because of the whole fact that it didn't generate any cash flows, didn't pay any dividends. Why would you own something like that?
Yeah, the classic value investing land is like, well, I can't calculate the value.
And that's where I came from, right? So I had that. The penny dropped when you realized that that is a feature, not a bug, right? Because the fact is that if it's more like a commodity, and I think you can only really compare it to gold, then it is going to keep going up simply because of the debasement of the currency, right? And it's a scarce asset. As long as they're printing money, it will go up in value, just like the housing market in Australia, right? It's exactly the same thing. Everyone thinks that they're a smart investor because they bought a house in Australia 10 years ago and it's worth triple.
Drives me mad.
It's got nothing to do with your skill as an investor, right? It's got to do with the leverage in the system and the fact that they're printing money, right? That's all it is. So when you start to realize these things about Bitcoin and the penny dropping, look, no one can... You know, the Satoshi thing that has disappeared is the best thing as well because it does give it the immaculate conception that it needed, right? Yeah, I think it would be a much more flawed asset if everyone knew who created it. So I think that is definitely one of its strongest things as well because, you know, you could argue that let's just say find out, let's, you know, if Harvey Weinstein was the creator of Bitcoin, probably would crash to 99%. But that's not the case. And to be honest, I think that the person who's created Bitcoin, I don't think they're around anymore. I think that's probably what's actually happened. And I don't think that anyone's ever going to find out whoever did it. So again, feature, not a bug, right? The fact that, like what you said, we can't have any kind of scandals. We can't have any of this stuff. This is all, it all gives me more confidence that this will continue on its growth, at least for the next 10 to 20 years. I don't think it will last forever. You know, people talk about the Bitcoin standard. If the world goes to a Bitcoin standard, the price, it's kind of, the price is irrelevant, right? Because if we stop using dollars because they become worthless and everyone's using Bitcoin, then we can't price it in dollars either. So the Bitcoin standard, everything ends then. This whole party right now, like, and don't get me wrong, if we're on the Bitcoin standard, it's going to be great for civilization. But we might not be trading it in the ways that we're trading it now. We might not be doing things that we're doing now. We're in a kind of like a crossroads here, right? There's a tremendous amount of opportunity with an asset that is incredibly unique. And we're still, you could argue that we're not in its infancy. We're probably not even in its, we're probably getting out of its middle age, you know, really, which is kind of.
Oof, I mean, that in itself is a big question. Do you think that?
It's
like, what would lend that as a.
The diminishing returns, right? Yeah. So all we have to look at is the rate of return. So this cycle will return around 12x from bottom to top. Right? Let's just say the cycles we're seeing continue. The next cycle will only do 6. The cycle after that will only do 3. Tell me what that is. That's something that's growing old. That's something that's that, you know, if you go back to 20 years ago, like this thing was doing 100 or 50 or whatever. Now we're down to 12, we're down to 6, we're down to 3. That's going to then drop to 1.5. So again, it's just a contrarian look. Of course, it's still young. And especially if it's going to be around forever, it's only been 15 years, but it's already had its explosive growth. Like it's already an adult. It's going to live forever, but it's already an adult, if that makes sense. Mm. So it's past its baby stage. It's walking. It's past its teenage stage. It's probably into its 30s and 40s right now. It's just going to live forever, right? So it's already quite a mature asset.
I think my pushback to that is, like, if I think about 100 people and I chatted to them on the street, you actually might find that, you know, 90% of them they've heard of Bitcoin. But if you said to them, how much of your net worth have you got in self-custody, they'd look at you like you're a complete alien. And so I think the percentage of meaningful adoption is quite small.
Yes.
And given that this is the first cycle in which we've got active nation state participation from a regulatory perspective, and they're about to start stacking the balance sheet, right? The strategic Bitcoin reserve, all this kind of stuff that's happening. If this market top, whenever it might be set, my initial timeline was for about August of this year, who knows what might happen. Yeah. If it does do a higher high higher than the range that diminishing returns suggests from the previous cycles, then that particular trend you're describing is broken. And that's where that whole phrase of like, all your models are broken. And that's not to say that you're wrong. I don't know. I definitely buy into this concept that as this preferred form of money takes hold across its three key functions of store of value, medium of exchange, unit of account, by definition, it will be less volatile and there won't be the same kind of price action. But I don't know when that is.
Yeah.
So it's a good one. Final point being, the concept of a Veblen good is key in that the easiest example being is, you know, when you're batting in the like elite watch realm or some kind of car or other luxury good, people pay more for it because it's more expensive.
Yes.
And so Bitcoin is the first product that's a commodity that when the price goes up, you don't just mine more gold or dig for more coal or pump more oil. You can't because there's a fixed supply schedule. And so that price inelasticity on the downside, that's fucking an unknown that I don't think has been properly stress tested yet. And we could see outrageous kind of fiat pricing of a Bitcoin.
Yeah. And to come back to that, you're absolutely right. But the thing is the model is broken. The model doesn't break to the upside, right? The upside can be narrative driven. And the real breaking of the model would be the support, right?
That 38K correct. Power law. Yes, and, okay, and interesting.
It would have to be a sustained break of that. COVID whipped through, right, for a very brief moment and then kind of snapped back up. So to break the power law model, we would actually have to have a sustained trend underneath the support. That would break that whole idea that it's following a power law trend. The bubbles... They're oscillations from these trends, and the oscillations are driven by narrative. They're driven by the money printers. They're driven by
human psychology.
They're driven by Elon Musk's Twitter, right? Yeah. So they don't matter so much. So yeah, I agree with you on that. But yeah, it's like it's flipping it the other way around.
Interesting. So, and hence your whole process has been about like what's the worst case scenario and how do we cater for that and therefore build something that's robust over the long term, which is, I think, it's a much, much more interesting engineering problem to have solved. This concept of diminishing returns, just to kind of really make sure we've hammered it out properly. So the point is that as a technology hits a marketplace, as a money is adopted, the idea that like the cost to purchase that coin is reducing over time in terms of the value growth. And what I am intrigued by is like it's such an interesting thing where Bitcoin's just this complete opposite of the status quo, right? Where you've got eight blokes 70 to 80 years old that get together every 6 weeks and go, yeah, I think the interest rate, i.e. the cost of money, should be, you know, 4% or whatever they say. In some ways, Bitcoin is a fairer reflection on the irrationality of humans. And the volatility that you guys are able to capture value from is going nowhere. So do you think there might be a scenario in which, yes, the diminishing returns plays out over time as more capital is drawn into Bitcoin, but do you think that there's still going to be, humans are emotional, right? There'll still be a Bitcoin price to trade, surely.
Absolutely. There's always going to be a Bitcoin price to trade, mostly because, you know, this is a highly liquid asset that trades 24/7. In other words, it is the best thing to trade, right? This is another thing when, you know, I guess it seems counterintuitive, but it's not really a scarce asset in the sense of what scarce is, right? To me, scarce is like, you know, there's a diamond on the top of the mountain, right? And there's 10 people running up to get it. And the one person's going to get it. Therefore, the other 9 people don't. At the end of the day, Bitcoin can be bought and sold on any given day of the week, at any time of the day, on any exchange throughout the world. It's not a scarce asset, right? But it is an asset that has a capped supply that cannot be tampered with. These are different ideas. So the supply shock narrative, I don't really agree with because I don't think there can be a supply shock in a market that's so liquid. The other thing is that the price is discovered in the futures and derivatives market, right? If we only had a spot market to trade, we wouldn't see the prices and we wouldn't see the bubbles that we get, right? The fact that people are trading derivatives and futures with leverage creates the volatility that you're referring to. That's what gives us the opportunity to capture value from, right? That's how I look at it, at least.
Okay. Here in Australia, at least, just to give an example, if you make a capital gain within 12 months, it's 20-something percent tax for the government.
Yeah.
If you hold your position for over 12 months, it's a 50% reduction of that, so 12% or something. When you're using the trading system that you have built, how does it account for taxation?
Well, what's really good is that when you trade futures, is you're not actually buying and selling the commodity itself. You're trading futures contracts, which means that you're only taxed on the P&L. There's no capital gains tax to futures trading. Futures trading is business activity. So you're simply taxed on your profit and loss, which is just like a regular business activity. Another reason why what we do is really cool, because if you are using, and it's particularly good in Australia, because we've actually got access to most international exchanges. So that Bitcoin, you can hold, let's just say you bought it 16K, you can hold it till the top, you can hold it forever. And we can trade futures, and we simply are paying a regular tax on the business activity of that trading. No capital gains tax at all on the futures trading activity, because that's what futures trading is defined as.
Interesting. I didn't know that. Because I was thinking that, like, God, if you're doing hundreds of trades with some kind of bot, then like, how you account for that would be...
Yeah, it's a lot of people don't expect that, but it's like...
I had no idea. And this is where accounting rules are so weird, because I was learning about the FASB updates in accounting in the States, and this is one of the reasons people are so bullish on MicroStrategy, is that the Bitcoin price movement can now be actually accounted for as revenue. And so if Bitcoin goes up by 10% and you own a whole ton of Bitcoin, that increase in dollar value of Bitcoin is now considered revenue for the company. So the price to earnings valuations of these equities, in theory, could be completely wild. And what you've just described is like when you're exchanging futures contracts, it's not a capital gain.
No.
It's kind of similar.
Yeah.
That's kind of, maybe I don't know enough about futures to judge that. But anyway, look, any accounting loophole that can be used is, again, it's like play the game that you see in front of you. And of course, don't cut corners. Like, I'm not suggesting anyone should end up in jail doing financial fraud. Yeah, but like, use the rules for what they are.
That's right.
I had one last question, if I may. Are you able to mention anything in terms of pricing for your product?
So pricing is dynamic based on the algorithms that we have to offer and also the subscription level. So what we do instead is we offer anyone who wants to speak with us a free consulting call.
Cool.
It's for around 45 minutes to an hour. We'll discuss everything with you on the call. We'll go through the trades with you. We'll go through all the tiers that we have in terms of strategies. And then we'll find what's the best fit for you. So, you know, the best thing to do is just, you know, you'll
get in touch
somewhere where they can get in touch. Great.
So if people want to reach out and learn more, where can they get in touch with you?
So just Google Minotaur Trading Systems, check out our X account, YouTube. You can DM me. You can just click a few buttons. You'll end up on a book a call page. It's all pretty well structured. So they'll be able to talk to someone within 24 hours. Like I said, we'll put aside 45 minutes to an hour of our time to speak with anyone who's interested in working with us. I have to say, though, it's kind of like a lot of people, when they're looking into these sort of things, they're vetting the companies and doing their due diligence. And we kind of do the same thing as well. Like, we want to be working with like realistic people with realistic expectations, people who understand the risks involved and what they're getting into. And then if that makes sense for us to work together, then we take them on as clients. So, you know, that's why we have that process of the call. We're not selling a bot out of the box. We're giving access to our IP, our strategy, our system. And this is what we trade our own Bitcoin with, our own money with. Like, this is our personal algorithmic strategy that we're sharing with the clients that get onboarded. So again, it's not a mass market product. It is more for, you know, the select few that get in early and that we like to work with.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jake.